Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, I'm going to be talking with Sherry Jacobus. We always have so much to say. There's always so much to talk about. But before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent and woman-run. I offer a show every Tuesday just for patrons called What's Up, where I get a little more personal and talk about whatever's on my mind. I also offer an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Look at the different tiers and support the show today. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Sherry Jacobus. Welcome back to the show, Sherry.
Hey, great to be here. We like to chat a lot offline, so now we have to switch to online.
I know,
I always forget what we say on the air versus what we say, you know, off air, because we're pretty chatty.
Yes.
Regardless whether the record button is on or off.
Okay, well, you know what? I want to just jump right into. I mean, I've got a bunch of different things that we're going to talk about. Some of them are going to be kind of fun. But mostly it's just going to be what's going on politically. So I want to start this off and I want to get your opinion, and I have some reasons that are going to back this up, but I don't feel worried about democracy anymore. And when I say that, I'm not coming from a place of privilege. I'm not coming from a place of not understanding all of the damage that is being done at the moment and that's already happened. But what I see is he's losing in every way. I see courts voting against him. I see, oh my God, this 250th celebration with like nobody there. He's clearly got dementia and he's falling asleep. He's pissing off right wingers. There's all kinds of indicators pointing to, you know, his approval rating is so low. And I know we still have years to go under this ridiculous regime, but they have fucked up massively, and the American public and the entire world can see it. And you know, while he's going to retain some of those MAGA voters, they'll always be there. I think in the bigger picture, America is rejecting everything that's happening. And so while there is a few years of pain left, and then of course once we can get out of this, there will be still growth before everything feels better. But I'm wondering, do you feel this way, or, you know, what's your take on this?
I mean, I agree and appreciate the optimism and the hope that's out there. But I think what we saw, Kimberly, with what NPR did with the so-called Alito resignation, I think there's a lot more behind that. And that does scare me. So I think we still may have a huge uphill climb here.
I believe we have an uphill climb, 100%.
Well, we may have some surprises. Trump, getting rid of the funding for NPR. He doesn't like them. Mm-hmm. If there was a true Alito resignation coming and they were giving it as an exclusive, it would have gone to Fox or mm-hmm. one of the right wing, you know, nutcase places.
Right.
This could be a number of things. It could have been a lot of people I see saying, okay, it sounds like an embargo going bad. It was an announcement that was supposed to be done on Friday. And so what you do is you would send a press release out that's embargoed for people that don't know. And I've been a press secretary and communications director. You have it. You give the information to reporters in advance. You say you cannot use this until this particular time and date. But you do that so they can prepare, so that editors and producers can get their team together, can get the background story. But I don't think that happened here. And I just had a discussion with somebody else in another venue. I don't think it happened here because you would not put an embargo out 5 days, 4 days in advance, mm-hmm. not for information that is this big. And I certainly would never do it in this climate with journalism, because journalism, there's a lot of people out there who, have their press passes, but they're not real journalists. It's all gone haywire. Mm-hmm. Journalism in America, as we've known it, is dead. And we have to mm-hmm. say that. I do not think that this was a mistake on an embargo. I do not think that this was an exclusive. I think it's possible it was a false flag to make NPR look bad, but to put it out there to help push Alito out. Remember, during to do that with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they wanted her to mm-hmm. go because they were afraid that, the next president would, that exactly what happened would happen. Mm-hmm. And this could be to push Alito out because they want, and I think there's something weird about Clarence Thomas being up on Capitol Hill and mm-hmm. not saying why. There's something going on where we know that they want to have a different birthright citizenship vote. And that was mm-hmm. too close for comfort to just say, yeah, we're going to keep our constitution and a 5-4 vote. Mm-hmm. So I think that we could be up against something that really hurts our democracy more than people want to realize. And that is if Trump gets to appoint another Supreme Court justice. So,
I was just going to say something about that.
Yeah. So while things are looking good, we're having these victories. I think the big fascist state fair thing up, in America's state fair on the mall here in DC where I am, that is a joke. I think what happened with the reflecting pool, again, I don't know how much those types of things matter. They're indicative right. of a larger problem.
Yes, it's indicative. Right.
Yeah. But this, and of course, Trump gets kickbacks for all this stuff. We know mm-hmm. that. But I think that the thing to focus on is what is going on with the Supreme Court, because I will feel better about democracy surviving if we can survive that particular situation. And then you have to wonder, what would Susan Collins do? Would she do like she did with Kavanaugh?
Of course she would.
Right. Or would she save herself because of the tight race that she's in Maine? If this happens before the election. So, there's all these different questions. Leonard Leo owns her lock, stock, and barrel. Mm-hmm. He owns her. He bought her Kavanaugh vote. So she's not this independent voice, mm-hmm. Of Maine. She is owned by these people. So we still have some really, really tough hurdles ahead of us. But again, I feel good about what's happened, but it does not make me I can't put blinders on and say I think democracy is going to survive, because, and it's not being pessimistic, I just think that we don't know yet. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. Although I don't feel like I have blinders on per se. I just feel like, I look at what happened in Hungary, and even though Donald Trump has only been, his total presidency hasn't even reached 6 years yet from the first term to this one. He's been in the picture for 15 years. So, or has it been, or has it been 10 years? No, 11 years. So, and I think Hungary was, under fascist rule for 15 years, and everybody said, fuck this shit, and they voted him out. Now, and this was against a rigged election. So with everything that you're saying, 100%, I'm not denying that there is all kinds of wretched things that were uphill battles, really devastating things can happen, because and the reason why specifically is because I think they do recognize that they don't have the power that they'd like to have. They have all the actual power, but what I'm talking about is, when it comes to the elections, when it comes to the people aren't going along with it, they're getting resistance. And I think that even if they were to replace a Supreme Court justice, I think the Democrats, which I do want to discuss something Bob said to me last night, but I think that, among the Democratic, candidate community, we're hearing more chatter of expanding the court. Now, one of the things Bob said is, he's concerned. He doesn't want Democrats right now to be screaming about expanding the court because he doesn't want Donald Trump to do it, before we can do it. And that's an interesting point, but
that's a very good point.
But I also think at the same time, liberals have been screaming about expanding the courts for so long. And I think the only way it's going to get done is when Democratic leaders feel like, okay, we have to. There's pressure from the public. This is, you know, we're seeing with our own eyes why. So, I mean, I think this story is not over. And I do think the Supreme Court is... I mean, it's weaponized. It's already weaponized. Right now, it's working against the American people. So whatever changes and whatever happens, there is still a pop. Because, like, let's just say he does get, you know, put in someone new. Well, the Democrats could get in power and they could change. Not only could they expand the court, they might change how the court runs. They, you know, I don't know if people would get grandfathered in or if they, you know, maybe they'll make a law that says if you've been there for 18 years and that 18 years is up, it's time for you to go. Whatever. I don't know what anybody, you know, is going to do. None of us do. But I think that what we're seeing is like people get, and I've said this for years and years and years, you know, when people are comfortable, they don't do anything. Well, this country is not comfortable.
That's an understatement. Yeah.
And I mean, you've got the gas prices, you've got food prices. Aside from the racism and aside from anti-trans, aside from all of the horribleness that liberals are upset about, you know, you've got the things that just human beings take off R and you know, D, that we're all upset about, whether it's, like I was saying, high gas prices or whatever. So people are pissed off that whole Iran war. I mean, there's so much. And I just think that no matter what they do, because they're going to do everything they can. This is their last huge grab. At least I think they genuinely do believe this. So it will get worse and it will get ugly and it will be chaos. But I still think, I just think that we're not going to accept it. And whatever goes down, we're going to repair later. And of course, that's up to us to do it. But and then I also just want to say that when it comes to things like the fair, the reflecting pool, Donald Trump's name on buildings, I would much prefer to see shit like that going on than things that are actually hurting people. And yeah, obviously, things are happening that are hurting people. So I should say more things. So the more we focus on the fucking pool and the more he focuses on the pool and his name and all of this superficial stuff, the better for the country, because then people aren't there. More people aren't getting hurt. But I do think that I do think, though, that we are basically telling him no. And then I wanted to ask you, because I think one of the other indicators here is Tallarico. And I know that there are a lot of people that are hopeful that he's going to win, and I think that he absolutely has an opportunity for that. It is Texas, so I'm not going to hold my breath, but I think it's possible. But I just think what, you know, right-wingers are terrified of him, and I know it because if I post about him on my Facebook page used to pretty much not get trolls. I really didn't get very many trolls. My first page did that got shut down. But this one that I created, I think in like 2021, you know, I mean, I've got 5,000 friends and all that, but it's not the engagement that I had on my old page. And I got trolled a lot. Now, if I post Tallarico, oh my God, the trolling is off the charts. So I'm just like, what do you think of Tallarico?
I think he's great, but we're talking about Texas,
right?
And they'll do everything they can to stop him. I think but just the fact that he's gotten this far in a state like that, it's why you're seeing all those trolls. And it's an orchestrated, probably fake attempt. Mm-hmm. You don't have all these people that are also concerned, and all of a sudden they're glomming onto your Facebook.
Right.
They're looking for you. They're doing this on purpose. But we've got like six of these Senate seats, and you know, we're going to, and it's still an uphill climb for Democrats to do this. Everything kind of has to go perfectly. And Texas, you know, you just never know what kind of crap they're going to pull. And that's the thing that scares me about Texas. You know, Maine, you know, Graham Plaster is a flawed candidate, but he has to make sure that Susan Collins is tied at the hip with Trump. And that's why, you know, that might be a calculus that Republicans are going to have if they want to have a if they want to add in, get Alito out and put in another Trump person, because Susan Collins would probably have to vote against it if she wants to maintain her fake image as being independent. You know, the Kavanaugh thing just about killed her. So we've got that. Iowa is looking good. North Carolina. I mean, so we have some really good news, but it has to go the right way. So I haven't sat down and worked it out, like pretending I'm on the other side. What would my strategy be as a political strategist? But if I'm looking at you know, Trump adding another MAGA Supreme Court justice, you know, Democrats will and should do 13 when mm-hmm. they've got power for the 13 federal courts of appeals or circuit courts, you know, to make it mm-hmm. even, because, I mean, things get bottlenecked and everything because it's not even. And you use that as the excuse, not just we have to undo what Trump did. You do it because that's how things should be. The mm-hmm. number of the population grows and changes. But also, look at the Republicans in the Senate. They may be, you know, maybe that's why Clarence Thomas was up on the Hill, although I think he was going to the House side. Maybe they're talking to people, looking at how this would work. Mm-hmm. Do we lose the Senate if we do this? Because if Susan Collins saves her seat by voting against a MAGA Supreme Court justice to make up for what she did by giving us Kavanaugh, you know, how does that change things? So mm-hmm. that's what the strategists behind the scenes are discussing at this point, Kimberly. Mm-hmm. They're looking at, can we do this? Do we pay too big? It's math. They're looking at the math. So Tallarico, I mean, what he's done so far is so amazing, which is why they're going to pull out all the stops to cheat and do everything they can to stop him. Mm-hmm. In fact, Trump is going to do this everywhere. He is going to do this everywhere he can. And he has succeeded in the past, even though he makes a fool of himself. He wears diapers. He's, you know, he's got this failed fair on the mall, on the National Mall in DC, but that stuff doesn't matter. The stuff that does matter is where he's been successful. That doesn't quite get mm-hmm. the attention that it should. So I don't know if that answers the question.
No, yeah, it does. And I mean, I think, you know, I mean, this whole thing with the Supreme Court is just a wait and see what's going to happen, because none of us know. We're just all just watching this. And I mean, I hadn't thought about the Susan Collins vote and all of that, but you're absolutely right, obviously. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I want to switch this over. And it's a subject that I enjoy talking about, but I have a slightly different take on it as far as Trump's health. And I talked about this with Sarah Burris last week, that, you know, we all know that drug that Eli Lilly and the FDA, the compassionate law or whatever it's called, clause, that allows somebody who is in grave danger, I get like life-threatening illness to, and the thing about this, though, I want to specifically, I don't remember the name of the drug. It starts with an I and it's R, and it's an obesity drug. But I was listening to somebody talk about it on YouTube, and she was saying that the only way that the FDA would approve something like this is if there is no other drug that could do the same job or, you know, do a good job. So this is an obesity drug. However, I think it's more potent or whatever than something like Ozempic. And I was watching the epistemic crisis doctor talk about the fact that this particular drug is really helpful, because it, like, if you have congestive heart failure, it helps your heart by like 30%. And he just went off on this list of all these ways that this drug is very beneficial for somebody like Trump. However, it is not helping his dementia. It does not keep him awake during the day because he is sundowning. His circadian rhythm is all fucked up because he's got dementia. And so here's what I want to ask you, because I was thinking about this and I was wondering, you know, because like the world is all waiting for him to die. And we're also waiting to see what's going on with Mitch McConnell, which we'll get into in a minute. But as far as Trump is concerned, it's almost become like a joke. There's memes about it. I talk about it all the time. Epistemic crisis doctor has a million followers because he talks about it. So I thought there is a benefit, though, of Trump staying alive, even though he's incredibly horrible and dangerous, because if he dies, it's likely going to be J.D. Vance, and he's also incredibly dangerous, but the press is going to treat him like he's a normal. So I'm wondering, do you think it's better if Trump were out of the picture and we moved on? Or do you think that his terrible behavior that's literally pissing off the world and pissing off all the MAGA voters is going to benefit democracy because he's just too awful?
Wow. You know, I have never thought of that question. I guess I've just been too excited at the mere thought of him, you know,
I know.
Hopefully having a long drawn out pain. I don't know. I mean, now that you brought it up, maybe we do need him to be propped up like Weekend at Bernie's for a little while longer.
It actually might be helping us in the long run.
Although J.D. Vance is pretty bad. Like the more you see him and hear him talk and everything, the worse he is. I think the answer, it would be, it depends how the media would treat J.D. Vance.
I predict right now they would act like he was, finally back to normal. That's what they'll tell us.
Anna Bash would sit him down and act like he's, you know, a normal guy.
Yes, that 100%. I mean, look how they treated Biden. Look how they treat Trump. And they're fascist friendly. That's what's going to happen. And even with MS now, you know, I mean, you've got people. I don't think like Lawrence O'Donnell is ever going to be easy on J.D. Vance or anything like that. There's always going to be a few people who are going to stand up. But because the oligarchs own our corporate media, the whole picture is going to be painted like, okay, all the chaos is done. There's no more chaos. Trump's gone. And we've got this normal guy in here now. And they're going to treat him like a normal guy. And he's, I don't know what he's going to do because he's really bad at this. He's one of those people, he sticks his finger in his fucking mouth and he holds it up and sees which way the wind is blowing. And that's where he's going to go because he said Trump was Hitler and he had 35 different names, you know, growing up until he finally landed on J.D. Vance.
But it hasn't hurt him. It hasn't hurt him.
It hasn't hurt him. Although it kind of has in that he's not, you know, he did make it up to vice president, but he didn't make it up to vice president because he's super popular. He made it because he did have an established name and, you know, the oligarchs love him and he will facilitate their plan and they know that. So like from the way I look at it is as much as I want Trump to die, I think, and since nobody has any, you know, nobody can control that. We can't will him to die. And so otherwise he would be dead now. But, because a lot of people
a million times over.
But it's like, I, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. So what I try to do is think, what could be the good? What could be the positive in this? And I do think that the worse he is, the better it is for us in the long run, because he's loud. That's the whole problem in the first place, because these oligarchs and Donald Trump and all of them, they came in saying, we've got to ram this down people's throats instead of boiling the frog. If they would have boiled the frog and slowly unfolded their plan, I think they would have been able to get away with it with the American people more. Not when grocery prices are going up, not when gas is, but it's like there was no reason to start this fucking war in Iran. There was all these things that were done that were just there. It's so fucked up and everybody's so angry. And I just, you know, I mean, I think JD will be normalized, but I don't think he'll be normalized to the point where people who are upset about gas prices and people who are upset about, you know, the farmers and all that, I don't think he's going to please any of those people. And as long as we still have, you know, ICE roaming our streets, people don't like that shit. We don't want the data centers. That's another thing. The data centers are becoming a big fucking talking point and people are rising up against those. So I think as much as I hate to say this, I feel like Donald's being a little bit of a, he's like benefiting us a little bit right now, even though it's awful.
Yeah, no, I'm actually thinking about this because I think you made a good point and I hadn't thought of that before. We haven't normalized him as much as we've gotten used to him. I don't know if that makes sense.
I agree with you. Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine. We've also said in the past that it's hard to imagine how this MAGA cult worship transfers to another person. Mm-hmm. But if JD, I'm thinking out loud here. I'm just thinking like, okay, if JD Vance, okay, if he becomes president because Trump croaks, and he doesn't, he has to worry about re-election or election, but so how does he govern until he runs for re-election? A lot of that would depend on the polls.
Yeah,
what Marco Rubio and DeSantis want to do, and other Republicans are, you know, because, you know, Rubio is not popular, so they'd have the long knives out for him. That could be something that benefits us. And if the argument, if the debate comes down to, is it better that he's more MAGA or do we benefit by pulling away from MAGA? Then they're going to start shooting at each other about who's more MAGA, who's less MAGA.
So that's
one good thing. Because Republicans who used to identify, the percentage of Republicans that used to identify as MAGA has shrunk.
Yeah.
You have people who are still Republicans, but they don't call themselves MAGA. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to look at those numbers. And believe me, there'd be a lot of polling and surveying going on to see, has MAGA died a bit since Trump? Is MAGA something, this worship, that can transfer to another person? Are the people that are still mouthing it, you know, like a Lindsey Graham, because he has to, or they'll kill him or expose him. Do they really mean it? This could be something like at the Wizard of Oz, you know, when, when the witch finally dies and all those flying monkeys of hers that were doing her bidding, all of a sudden they start cheering, you know, the witch is dead. Yeah,
exactly.
So I'm raising some questions here that I don't have answers for. So a lot of it would depend on that. I'm thinking, okay, I'm pretending I'm a strategist for one of these Republicans that wants to be president. First thing I'm going to do is find out, is MAGA dead without Trump? And if it is, how many Republicans really would like to kind of move away from this?
Yeah.
Some will want to embrace it if they think it's still strong and they can grow it. But if MAGA is something you can't grow and it's something that belongs just to Trump, then you don't really have that much of a future if you're running on that, unless Dan and Bash and the press start helping you a whole lot.
And they will.
Yeah, maybe. So I guess, I don't know. A lot to think about there.
Yeah, I mean, because there's going to be, you know, the day he dies, no matter what that is from.
I can no longer fit into the dress that I had picked out back when we thought he was going to be impeached, you know, a million years ago. I had a whole different outfit and now I can't wear it.
Well, I was going to say
not
that.
A style.
I think there's also the X factor, right? The thing that we're not going to be able to predict, because I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we're going to be able to predict, right? He dies. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. But there's going to be something that we just don't know. It's that X factor, and we'll find out when it happens. And I don't even know what that is. Maybe it is public sentiment. I don't know what it is, but it's just something. And, you know, I love this woman. She goes by Knitting Cult Lady on Twitter. I'm sorry, I always say that, on YouTube. And she was raised in a cult, in a sex cult. And she's really fucking smart. She was in the military, and she's really smart, and she knows about cults. And I had seen a video and asked her on my show, but her video was like, what happens when the cult leader dies? And ultimately, she said, basically, the cult disperses and finds other cults. So that's going to be interesting. You know, what's going to, when he dies, because I mean, I don't think it's solely Trump. You know, I think that there is a MAGA ideology without Trump, but is there enough people there, like you were saying, to keep it going? I doubt it, because I think a lot of these people are conspiracy theorists anyway, and cultists anyway. So they're going to find other cults to latch onto. And one of the things about cults is, and this is going to lead me into my next thing. There's community there. People find community, and that's why it's so difficult for them to leave, because all their friends, all their family, it's all connected to this cult. And so this is what I was going to say. There's this couple that I watch on YouTube, and I know I'm positive they're Trump supporters, and they never talk about politics. They're just a lifestyle blog, and it's their life, and they cook food and shop and blah, blah, blah. And this is going to sound really fucking condescending of me, but because they are so different than I am, it's like, you know, there is a documentary right now on Netflix. I think it's called The Gorillas. And that's what I feel like when I'm watching them. I feel like I'm watching a documentary of a alien species to me. You know, it's like, I don't understand these people, but I'm kind of fascinated by them. And so what's happening right now is the wife, she is going through some health issues, and she's got, her skin is breaking out, and it's just a fucking mess. And I feel bad for her, because I can't even imagine, you know, she's got this YouTube channel and she's got a lot of people on it, and she's showing up on camera and her face is unbelievable. I mean, it's just, it's broken out so terribly. It's bleeding. It's awful. And it's amazing, because she is just not allowing it to get in her way. But the whole point of this is, she was at her family's house for like Father's Day, and they were just having a regular Father's Day family get together. And so she's shooting everything, and they've got the food and, you know, the relatives, and you're hearing the little chit chat conversations. And I was thinking, oh my God, you know, I mean, this is exactly the same thing as when my dad has a get together and when Bob's mom has a get together, but they hate us. They look at us and they think we're the enemy. And we look at them and we think they're the enemy. And we're really not that different. But the thing that's different is they've been radicalized, and this is not new information, but it's like they've been radicalized by Rush Limbaugh. They've been radicalized by Foss. My aunt was specifically radicalized by Rush Limbaugh, specifically him. And, you know, there was that whole movie, the Brainwashing of My Dad, was about how, you know, this liberal man was sitting in a car every single day with Rush in his ear and telling him, the reason your life is so fucked up is because of liberals. And so they have been these victims of this fucking, you know, Fox News and right-wing machine bullshit, disinformation, lies. And I just thought, if we didn't have that anymore, this country would look so different, because maybe we would all have different ideas about how things should be run. But this hate is manufactured. And it's like, it's not new. I'm not realizing anything new, but it really, really hit me. And because it was like, it just made me feel so sad. I felt sad for this woman that I don't know, because she's going through this health crisis. And I felt like, you know, I wish I could talk to her and tell her, hey, I've had acne and you're going to get through this and blah, blah. But she's a fucking MAGA and she thinks I'm a horrible person.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Is there a place for these people to go? You said, right. Okay, with cults, they all disperse, I guess, into smaller cults.
Other cults. Yeah. Sorry. So I just went off on a tangent.
But I was thinking about your original question. So if Trump dies, does he become a hero, a martyr,
right?
This Christ-like figure. Or if he just, you know, goes out of office and J.D. Vance has to run, and then, you know, the different candidates will decide, do they run from Trump or do they run towards him to try and take his cult? I'm going to come down on the side of, we can't have him die now, because he becomes a godlike figure and they're all going to try and get his cult. Right. I think we have to make sure that the cult dies, maybe not with him. I think we have to term it, the cult dies with his presidency.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And then people like this couple, and everything, they're still going to be who they're going to be.
They're still
going to
hate me.
You know,
yeah.
You could say Rush Limbaugh did that to them. I knew Rush a little bit. We were actually friendly. I don't even think Rush believed half of what he said. It was just a job to him. He'd get up off the air and he'd completely forget about what
he was influential. He influenced
people. Oh, yeah. He did. And Democrats never were able to, or didn't try that hard. Maybe they made one attempt, but they didn't really capture, you know, AM radio and appreciate that people listen to this in their cars in the flyover country where they're driving a lot. And, you know, very few people, you know, when you look at it, actually have paid subscription radio. And Democrats are still not doing that, because Democratic consultants don't make money on radio. So they don't push it even with radio actualities. It makes me crazy. Political consultants don't make money on radio, so it doesn't go into the plan, which is just nutty. And it's a way to get the flyover country in those red states. But, you know, I'm digressing a little bit here. But these people, if this is who they are, Kimberly, and think about pre-Trump, this is who they were before.
Yes, I agree 100%.
And we didn't notice it. But now we have a place for them to go where they can say, hey, look at me. I'm over here now. I'm a part of this group. They didn't. Some changed. Some became worse than they were. But there had to be something there already where they have
100%.
That. Maybe that's why people who are really into their churches are ones that are more susceptible to this.
Yes.
Not that God is bad, not that Jesus is bad, not that Christianity is bad, but churches are not necessarily, organized religion is not necessarily all that biblical or what Christ taught. I mean, it's gotten bastardized a whole lot over 2,000 years. So the people, they want the answers to be simple. If I say these words in the Our Father, and I do it three times after I go to confession, then my sins are cleansed. I don't have to think about, then I am forgiven for what I did. I don't have to think about the person I harmed and what they have to live with for the rest of their life that I did to them. I can completely forget about it because I said these words. I was raised Catholic. I used to go to confession before turning 18, when I was allowed to make the decisions on my own to not. And I always thought, that's just so stupid. you know, say three Hail Marys and an Our Father.
Exactly.
And all that horrible shit you just did, you know, goes away. It's like, oh, it's so easy. Then I'll go do more bad shit.
Exactly.
And just come in here and tell the priest about it. And then I'll say, you know, three more Hail Marys and an Our Father. And this is a great deal. And so, you know, I think that, you know, like what the MAGA cult wanted, they wanted to know that, you know, that somebody out there listened to them and understands them. And as somebody that's not like them, I'm thinking of the sort of the toothless red hat wearing ones that give their rent money for their trailer to buy the gold sneakers. Yes. They want somebody to tell them that they're okay, that even mm-hmm. though they've been left behind or something, somebody else is telling them you're not in this alone and we're going to fix it. Mm-hmm. And they got taken for a ride, of course, but it's that sense of belonging.
It is. That's what it is. I mean, I look at my aunt and I feel like, you know, my mom and I will talk about her and say, you know, if she saw this piece of information, what would she say about it? But the thing is we know what she would say, because when they have man on the street interviewing MAGA, like there was this one guy who said, hey, you know, what did you think when Joe Biden did this thing? And they would have their opinion. And then he would like this thing and they go, oh my God, it's so awful. And then he'd go, oh, wait a minute. It was Donald Trump that did that. And immediately it was like everything changed. Oh, it's okay now. Like it was okay for them when Donald Trump did
it. Or Hunter Biden versus, you know, the Trump kids.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
They stole the painting. These guys.
Yes.
So
it's like they don't care. But I think what will happen though, when he does die, you're right that there's going to be a lot of polling, but I do think that it's kind of going to die off because he is the one that has the charisma. No one in the Republican Party right now has the charisma Donald Trump does. And Donald still has the charisma with a good portion of his base. He hasn't lost all of them. The Republican Party, I don't think, likes him. They just fear him for whatever, you know, all these different reasons, whether it's threats or they're afraid for some reason or another that he's going to somehow harm their careers, harm their families, whatever. Yeah. But so I don't think that they're excited about him. I think they don't like him, but they have to go along with him. But when you go with it was 30% was his base. And I would assume that at this point it's under 30. I don't think he necessarily has 30% of the American people. And I think that we also have to consider all the independents in there. But, you know, I mean,
a lot of these people were new voters, Kimberly, under Trump.
Yes.
A lot of the MAGA, they're not sophisticated voters. They've never voted before. They've never been activists before. And that's how it became more like a cult, you know, they're a tribe for them. And so will they sort of drift off and lose interest in politics when Trump is out of the picture?
Yeah.
So that could happen. That's a lot of it, too. How many people, if he's already down to 28%, how many of them just lose interest? And you see that in special elections and maybe the midterms. They don't know that there's an election. They don't know what a midterm mm-hmm. is. They don't. They just don't. And they're not going to show up. And a lot of people say, well, if Trump were on the ballot, they'd show up. Well, for people that do vote, Trump kind of is on the ballot. And
right.
I'm talking about this subset of people mm-hmm. That now defines the MAGA cult. And even if they go off and they're not going to be as passionate about J.D. Vance. I think the cult's going to shrink and shrink and shrink where it's no longer viable as a political strategy. If you're running for president, if you're running for the nomination for the Republican Party, it's not a viable strategy to play to that cult, which could get to the point, I think, when Trump is out of the picture, where there will be somebody who smells blood in the water mm-hmm. that being associated with that cult, you know, they start isolating you out. So it's not a plus. It's like, if you're going to go and court the cult, you're going to lose all these other people that want to move on. These Republicans that no longer consider themselves to be MAGA, the people that were afraid of Trump, but hate him, the people who still were establishment people that are still remain in Congress, although there's fewer and fewer of them. And so it could get to the point where you can't have it both ways. You can't court the cult and then also court the normies.
Right. Yeah, you can't do it. Wow. Okay, I want to ask you this. I want to get to some fun stuff in a second. But first, I want to ask you, what's your take on this whole thing with the Democratic Socialists? I just want to hear what you have to say. I don't know what I'm going to say because the argument out there is really pissing me off. But I'm just curious, like, what's your take on what's happening with them?
I think once you start putting that label on them, you're going to turn off a lot of people that don't understand that sometimes, even if you're a conservative Republican, there are certain times in our history and certain circumstances and issues with our country where sometimes you need that from a group that you are taught to hate, but they may have some really good ideas that work for us now. It doesn't mean that you have to sign off your life and now you're a socialist or a democratic socialist. So I think the best way for them to be successful around specific issues that they want to people to coalesce around is to stop making it a tribe with mm-hmm. a separate title. And I think that you find that out when the people who want to pull support from them are the ones that label them. So I don't know right away how you do that, but because there are too many people that want to identify as that, as a separate tribe, as a subset, a sub-party within the Democratic Party to create this division. And then you stop, then you're not having a debate about specific issues that are necessary right now. 10 years from now, we may not need it, but we need it now. And so, I mean, you see this with Mamdani in in New York. You know, he's done some great things, mm-hmm. and you can support those great things without saying, well, now I'm a member of his party or his right. movement.
And yeah, so totally.
That's what has to happen. And that is a really, really tough thing to do, but it helps if you recognize it and adopt it as a political communication strategy, which I don't think they're doing. I think that's just people like my group is now getting power, so we're going to go and try and get more people to join my group and start identifying, you know, as democratic socialists.
Yeah, and the thing that's pissing me off is more on the side of the voter side, because I feel like I think a lot of this is also tied to Israel and AIPAC and all this stuff, and people are tribal that way. But I feel like, you know, prior to Mamdani, prior to this whole conversation, not that this is a new conversation, but it's really gaining momentum. But I think that all we ever heard was the Democratic Party's a big tent, because you're not going to get the same person in New York as you're going to get in Iowa. But now that's still true, right? It's yeah. still take off the Democratic Socialist messaging and labeling. And like you said, he's doing some good things, but we put labels on each other and then we all become divisive and hate. And that's what's pissing me off, because I'm seeing people, you know, Mamdani, I shared a meme that he did something that made it easier to have pets, you know, if you're renting. Yes. And somebody came on and said, oh, he's always trying to be so cute. And I deleted the comment because I thought, you know what? This is a big fucking deal to people with pets. It's a yeah. big fucking deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's not being cute. This is not about him. The picture was him holding a cat, and this woman has decided she hates him. And I don't know if it's because he's a democratic socialist. I don't yep. know if it's because of his, well, what I'm saying is I don't know if it's solely based on his label or if it's also based on whatever they think he thinks about Israel.
But you just said, remember we were talking a minute ago, you said the man on the street interviews when you say, Biden did yes. X, Y, and Z, yes. and the MAGA just
there you go. Yes,
and
see, then, we're not and all then that different.
No, yeah, and you say no, Trump did it, and they changed their minds, and I think that's a perfect example of yeah. what you're talking about here, Kimberly. Is that when you start putting the labels on it or associate it with a person, yeah. it's a whole different thing. When you're just trying to sell a single
the
item,
idea.
not yeah. even a menu, like this whole thing here. This is what we're right. running on. Here's our platform. It's just do it one issue at a time.
Yeah.
And then people, and it's not so scary. It's like, you right. know, take your medicine a little bit at a time. If you're going to eat vegetables, you don't have to sit there and eat a whole pile of broccoli if you don't like right. it, but you can mix it into your stew yeah. a little bit. yeah. And so that was probably a stupid analogy, but I think when they're pressuring people to like adopt this whole new title for
right.
themselves,
yeah.
and join our cult or our church or our tribe or come over to our side of the street, it's just too big of a recipe for disaster and failure
yeah.
and division and
well,
you know
yes,
and
100%.
The danger in this yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I look at somebody like Plattner and, you know, I stayed away from him. I didn't fucking talk about him because I just felt like, first of all, this is happening in Maine. And even though his vote will, you know, have something to do with my life, because if he votes with or against the Democrats, that will affect me. But at the same time, this was for Maine voters to decide in the primary. And I did not like him. But I'm of the mind that we know who Susan Collins is. So let's just give him a shot because everybody keeps insisting that he's going to be the next Fetterman. And I'm like, why are you saying that? You don't know that. Maybe he will, but maybe he won't. And, you know, I want to throw in there, and I'm not defending him. I am not defending him because I agree with you. He's problematic. I wish we would have had somebody different, but he's our guy. And I will say, and I say that as a Democrat, he went through four tours in Iraq. And, you know, my father went to Vietnam. And when he came home from Vietnam, granted, he was very young, but he was fucked up for a while. Because he was a young guy in war and he had to see shit that no one should ever see. And, you know, I'm grateful that my dad is, you know, a healthy for the most part. You know, he's turning 80 this month and he's got a good family. He's led a good life, but he had to fucking go in a war and see awful shit. And you know, he hasn't really told us what he's done, what happened over there. He hasn't talked about it. So I don't know what he had to do, but when you're thinking in terms of war, you can guess, you know, what my father might have had to do and what he witnessed, and it fucks you up. And so I'm not making excuses for Graham Plattner, but I feel like he went through four tours and that's going to take a toll. And it's also going to give him and inform him when he's, if he gets elected. So, you know, I hope for the best with him. I hope that even though he's a problematic candidate, if he gets elected, that he does a wonderful job. Of course, we all do. I'm not going to assume he's going to become Fetterman, and I'm not going to start talking shit about him because I just feel like, all right, we know who Susan Collins is.
Yeah, to join her at the hip to Trump. That's the key.
Yes,
here.
That's what he has to do.
Graham Plattner is running against Trump Collins. Call it Trump Collins. Mm-hmm. He's running against Trump Collins. And that's what matters here. And that would be the political communication strategy I'd recommend. Now, again, what I brought up earlier here when we were talking was if there is a Supreme Court opening and it gives Susan Collins the chance to prove, especially if it doesn't make the difference in the confirmation, like Trump still gets his pick, but Susan Collins gets to vote against a Trump pick.
Yeah.
You know, that could be something that saves her seat and Republicans might be working that into the
I don't know how Susan Collins thinks, but she's not a spring chicken. And I would think that if I were her, I would think this is probably my last run. So maybe she wouldn't care. Like, is she going to run again in 6 years?
No.
Is she going to be alive in 6 years? She has Parkinson's.
She named what she has, why she talks like that. I forget what she said it was.
But it was, it's not just talking, it's they're shaking.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know. I mean, nobody
remember
knows
when
what
she
it
was
is.
First elected and the guy who became her husband was her, he was doing her transition, he was going to be her chief of staff. And they wanted to meet with me and she wanted me, you know, wanted me a communications director. And I, at the time I was communications director for a House committee and I didn't really want to go over to the Senate. But I really liked her. And she was a moderate like me. And it was, you know, Republicans had taken over the House at the time. And it was the first time working on Capitol Hill. I mean, I'd worked for Bob Michael, Larry Hopkins, so they would not be allowed in the Republican Party these days. You know, Bob Michael was the House Republican leader and he'd meet all the time with Tip O'Neill. It was just a different time.
Yeah.
But it was the first time that I started feeling this little bit of a squeeze from the right wing that had already always just been these fringes off to the side, but Newt needed them and the religious conservatives, the evangelicals, what we call the family groups, as part of the coalition to get the majority. And so sometimes you had to give a nod to them. And so I was relieved during that era, because a couple years after that, to see a female Republican senator who was sane and moderate. And she kind of maintained that until Kavanaugh and the Leonard Leo money and she needed their help. And I think they cheated for her. Remember Karl Rove famously said allegedly to a whistleblower that if a state is within 3 percentage points on election night, you can cheat undetected, you know, a few votes per precinct. And I think they broke their 3% rule for Susan Collins. I think she was too far down in the polls. Leonard Leo actually bought in the state of Maine. He gave her so much money and had the big fundraiser for her. I think they did that in exchange for her vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh. And so they own her. So if they want to own her again, they probably would have to let her. And if they don't need her vote, they would probably have to let her vote against a Trump SCOTUS nominee to save her.
Right.
Because the only way, you know, Graham Platner, as you've noted, he's problematic.
Yeah.
But you have to make it Trump Collins, Trump Collins, Trump Collins. All one word, Trump Collins. And that would be a way for her to split from Trump and unhinge, you know, not be joined at the hip with him.
Right. So
that's just me thinking out loud as a strategist.
That makes sense. Makes sense. Okay. Now I want to ask you, why aren't they talking about Mitch McConnell? Somebody said he's on life support. I don't know if that's true, but he probably is. And then I've also, now I don't know what you know, so I'm going to ask you this. I mean, some people are saying that he's basically, they're trying to ride this out so they don't have to replace him.
Yeah.
What do you think is going on? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I think this could be a Weekend at Bernie's type situation too. If he's incapacitated, obviously the right thing to do would be to just resign so that they could put somebody in there.
Mitch McConnell doing the right thing.
Yeah. My guess is you know they can keep him alive if they can keep a heartbeat, and you can do that.
That is so gross. That is so gross. Oh my God.
But you do it so that you don't get to replace him. I think there's some stuff going on there. Just like, what's his name? Tom Kim Jr.
Yes.
Gets to take 3-4 months off because he's depressed, but he's voting against legislation and that would allow other people to do the same. Yes. He was getting paid, but he wasn't so depressed that he couldn't do a lot of trades. You know, stock trades and make a ton of money.
Oh, the only thing that's saved
my depression. Well, his doctor said it was, when I get depressed, I would be being happier too if I got to make a few million bucks. Yeah, that would lift my spirits immediately, Kimberly. And then I would say, Kimberly, get in an Uber or hop on the closest metro and come to DC because we don't want you driving. I'm going to buy all the drinks. You and Bob come because that's going to make me not depressed anymore. And of course, you guys would want to do that because you don't want Sherry to be depressed. So yeah, I would want to make a couple million like he did. So, you know.
Yes, don't we all? Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I've got a couple things here. Let me look. Okay. First, I want to ask you, have you watched, these are the more fun, not political questions. Have you seen The Dinosaurs on Netflix?
No, I haven't.
Highly recommend.
All right.
It's Steven Spielberg and what's his name? Why can I never remember his name? Morgan Freeman. He's the narrator. Of course he is.
Yes. And, the voice of God.
Yeah. And it's great because, I mean, the documentary starts off with the amphibians that were here before the dinosaurs. And I did not know this because I didn't pay that close attention in school, but I didn't know that it fucking rained for a million years. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. And now I have my new binge. I just finished all of the, I'm updated now on all of the Virgin River things.
Okay. Yeah, my mom was into that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm now going to have to do this one. In fact, I was going to put out the clarion call on social media. What should I watch next on HBO?
I've got a couple of suggestions for you, but there's four of these and they're like 48 minutes each. They're fantastic. They're mind blowing also. Have you seen Widow's Bay?
Widow's Bay?
Oh my God, you got to watch it. It's so fucking good.
Netflix?
I think it is, but if it's not, it's HBO. I don't know what it is. You know, you're going to have to look it up. It's called Widow's Bay. It's excellent, and they just got renewed for a new season. I know you're going to like it. Because I remember you were going on and on and on about somebody somewhere on Facebook, and I told Bob about it. And like, Bob loves the show so much. We've already watched it through twice, and
me too.
He immediately wanted to start watching it again. I'm like, wait, we gotta watch some other things.
It's one of those things that you can't explain why it's so good.
It's just so good.
These people that just, you know, live their life in this nothing town. Okay, yeah, I'll tune right in, Sherry. You know, but it's so good.
It's so good. It's so funny. And it's got, oh, and you know what? One of the guys from that show is on, I don't remember, Joel, her best friend. He's on Widow's Bay.
Oh, okay. So he plays him.
Yeah, he's great. So I love him. I want to be his friend. I want to hang out with him. So, yeah. And then I'm trying to think what else, because we just finished Widow's Bay. And the Bridgerton.
Did you see Bridgerton?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
what is that?
Man. Ooh, you have to see it. It's one of those things I can't explain. What they do is they take England from like 100 years ago, mm-hmm. and but it's different because it's a Shonda Rhimes thing. So they just change mm-hmm. history a little bit, but it's not any part of the storyline. But where a king married a princess who's black from another country, and so everything is racially integrated. So the high society of Great Britain, with the waltzes and the queens and the dukes and all that, is black and white, and it has nothing to do with the storyline. It's just like, oh, if the world were slightly different, right. this is how it would be. And that's what's kind of cool about it, because it's Shonda Rhimes and she just wanted to do this. So it's like, we're going to change this one point of history, and it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But it is just all the ins and outs and the intrigue and oh, I can't, it's one of those things I can't explain, but yeah, somebody recommended just, to me, and I got hooked. I got hooked.
Well, there's also, I mean, if you haven't seen, I think it's just one, but it's called The Gorillas, and I think it's on Netflix, and it's David Attenborough. I mean, it's just so worth it. It's so worth it.
Okay, I have seen that as I've been scrolling. So I got Dinosaurs and Gorillas.
And Gorillas.
And Widow's Bay.
Widow's Bay. Yeah, I think you'll be very happy with all of those. Yeah, those are really good programming.
That should keep me busy for a while for the heat spell that we're in.
No kidding. And then I just want to throw this out there that I posted something on Facebook, and I have so many fucking issues with Facebook, and I'm still on it, but whatever. I posted something and somebody commented, and I replied to them. And my reply was, I need a new drug, one that won't make me sick. And now I got restricted, and my my profile is at risk. So, you know, I don't know, am I going to lose this one too? But the reason why is because they showed me, it said something about illicit drugs. And I thought, oh my God, how many fucking medications are they selling on Twitter? How many drugs are they selling on Twitter? I just said drug. I didn't say any kind of particular drug or illicit drug. I just said, I need a new drug.
Then you have to make the U be a V, like if you use the F word that. You can't,
like, God, you can't even fucking say that. It's fucking believable. And I do want to say, just really quick, with the whole AI thing, I could be wrong. This is a guess. I don't think that the AI thing is going to be as bad as we think. I'm not saying it's great and we got to figure it out. It's never going to go away.
It's not going to go away, but it will tell you what you want to hear and give you some bad advice.
It does. It gives you terrible advice. Fucking
it gets
terrible
stuff
advice.
Completely wrong. I even, you know, when I saw what it said about me, it's like, well, no, that's a different person, but okay. You know, but forever and ever and ever, that's going to, you know, it says this about Sherry Jacobus. It's like, nope.
Well, you know, it did. I'll just give you this brief little story. I had heard about, you know, somebody mentioned passive income. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go over to AI and ask, what's a good way to make some passive income?
Prostitution. So
It blurts out all this stuff and it tells me all this stuff and I'm looking at it and there's a lot of stuff that I won't do. And I'm not going to get it too detailed here, but what I will say is I landed on something that seemed, and I apologize to all of my listeners to my Tuesday show because I already told the story. But anyway, so I see this one thing and I'm like, oh, I could do that. I could do that. I need to learn how to do it, but I could do it. So you just have this story where person writes in AI and says, hey, what's a good passive income idea? AI says, here's three or four of them. And person goes, oh, okay, that sounds great. I'm going to look into it. So I'm going to get involved. So I start getting involved, right? I buy the websites needed in order to do it. And because it involved, you know, online shit. And then I started thinking about it. And I was like, do pages like this often get, because it was a YouTube page, do they get demonetized? Yes. So AI had basically just told me, go do something that gets demonetized. So I thought, okay, well, what about if I did this instead? And it was about my book. I thought maybe what I could do is I could do a YouTube page and have stories from my book, The Virgin Diaries, which is obviously about stories of, you know, first time sex. So I took a screenshot of my book and I told, I told AI, this is my book. This is a story from my book. Can you put this into text for me? No, I can't do it. because it's talking about sex with minors, and I can't do that. I'm like, oh, but you can suggest to me something that perhaps I could get in trouble for with the law, because that was one of the things, you could get in trouble with the law for what they suggested. And it would also be putting all your time and money in, and you get demonetized, but you won't take my copywritten words and put them in a text that are from a book. And it's just like, I just was like, oh my God. And I think, you know, Bob sometimes, I mean, we all use it, even if we don't think we're using it. Cause like when you Google something, you're using it. And yeah. Bob was, I don't know, doing something. And he was, I think he was the one who told me that if you ask AI how to spell Google, it tells you it's spelled with, or how many O's are in Google? It tells you 3. And so I think I went to ChatGPT and I asked, and it said 3. Wow. And I said, really? Explain it. Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. It only has 2.
Yeah, and AI then, does that yeah. a lot too.
Yeah, it tells you you're right.
Yeah.
It tells you you're right when you're obviously right. And so the result for me is like, I don't really use AI because it's too fuck. It makes me so angry. I get so angry when I mean, sometimes I use it just, you know, for whatever I'm doing and I need a quick answer, just like we Google everything. So, and I try not to use it too much, and I would never use it to write for myself or anything like that. But you know what I do? It's so funny because sometimes I write out a post, right? Like I'm in a mood and I write this dry kind of humor post. And then I'll post it into AI and say, is this funny? If I post this, is this funny? And then it'll be like, no, here's something that's funny. And then it gives me the most boring, it's trope. It's not funny because it doesn't have a soul. You know? It's like, there is no soul. It's just information. You can't, information, it's like AI doesn't know how to be funny. That's human, right? That comes from us. That doesn't come from information. So,
well,
it's
and
like,
AI doesn't have any information until they get it from us.
Exactly. And so I think that, yes, we've got a problem with AI, but I think it's something that if we get it regulated and we change the way that it, you know, so we're not, it's not using all this fucking condensation and using all this water. If we can figure out ways around it, I think it's great because it's never going to go away, and it can absolutely, you know, we heard television was going to be the end of us. Then we heard the internet was going to be the end of us. And maybe it is, right? Maybe it is, but that's all. Human beings freak out over all the change every yeah. single time. Like on Facebook, you know, I used to be on Facebook primarily, and they would always change the format. And everybody would lose their mind. And I was just like, oh my God, they're going to change it in a month again. And then you're going to be upset because it's not like it is now. Like, it's always going to change, but people don't like it. So I get why people don't like AI, and I get why, you know, I understand the danger, and I understand, you know, all of it. But if we regulate it and, you know, figure out a way to use it to our benefit, but look at fucking internet. It's
like
also
pot.
Like that way.
Like pot.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I mean, you know, when I was coming up, you know, I was like afraid of it. Oh, it's a gateway drug to shooting up. And then
I was
got
never
cancer,
afraid of it.
Well, it got to the point where you didn't know what it was laced with and everything. And then
right.
I get cancer and I got a medical card. It wasn't, you know, recreational wasn't legal in Maryland yet. My oncologist didn't like the vaping, but you need a quick hit to
yeah.
take the edge off. But, you know, and the edibles were good for longer term, help you,
yeah.
you know, the anxiety when you're going through treatment, your chemo, radiation, and just all of it. You need that. And then I use some of it. I don't vape. I don't want to put foreign substances in my lungs, but I do get sleepy time edibles because mm-hmm. they do help me. They don't put me to sleep, but they help me relax so that I can sleep. And I only yeah. do like a half of one. And I no longer think it's a gateway drug to heroin.
No, it isn't.
I'm going to be shooting up. Yeah. You know, I'm kind of over that 50 years after I first started.
Right. Well,
that,
you know, right? I mean, obviously, you know, I grew up in Southern California and I was exposed at a very young age to many different drugs. You know, I mean, there was just everywhere. In fact, in my high school, everybody was doing, well, I don't want to say everybody because not everybody, but a lot of people were doing cocaine and it was easy to get. And it was just everywhere because it was the 80s. And I lived on a beach town. And, you know, I mean, if you wanted to get cocaine, if you were a girl, you could get it for free. And it was funny, though, because I did, you know, when I was a kid, I did smoke pot and I tried a variety of drugs. Like my girlfriend and I once, we tried speed and I hated it. I hated it so much and I never did it again. And then we tried downers and I hated them and I never did them again, at least not recreationally. And then I did mushrooms. I think I've told that story before and it's a fucking hilarious story. Not at the time, but I, you know, I thought in my mind because mushrooms were from the earth, they like I was afraid of LSD, but I thought, well, you know, mushrooms are from the earth. And it just so happened
that it's like a salad.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like eating a salad. And then
you were young at this time. I trust you're pretty young. Well, I guess
I was 17 and basically my girlfriends had all done it and they were like, yeah, it's awesome. And so we were going to go to the Griffith Park. It was, you know, the Griffith Park Lazarium show of Led Zeppelin. And it was in Hollywood and we lived in the beach town. And so we met these guys who my friends knew and they're like, hey, we got mushrooms. And they were like, woohoo, woo. So like we all did them. And then I wound up in Hollywood Presbyterian because it did not agree with me. And I never did mushrooms again. And, you know, I mean, I tried a lot of different things. I can't say pot was necessarily a gateway drug because there were so many drugs kind of circulating in my youth. But I was fortunate in that I tried certain things and I was like, no, I don't like this. And I can't say that I'm proud of this, but you know, when I was younger, I did cocaine, but then I think I don't know how many times I did it. Maybe I did it 5 times. And I did have fun. It was kind of fun. But then I remember it was like the last time I did it, I think it was around 1989, and I think it was cut with something, and I felt like I had been poisoned. I didn't like the feeling, and I remember I just went home and I ate because I thought I need sustenance. I need, you know, I need something because I feel like I ingested something icky, and then that was it. I was like, I never want to do it again. And I would go to parties, and it was everywhere. And I was like, I had absolutely no interest in doing it whatsoever.
I had done it. I had been dating a guy who had it, so that's why I did it with him. And then, and at first, I thought, well, this is kind of cool. And then one time, did too much, whatever, and you didn't sleep all night, and heart is racing, and I did not feel right. And that's when I started thinking, this probably could be very, very dangerous.
Yes.
And just because I'm young and can bounce back from it, I thought I don't need this. I think I'll just not do this anymore.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, you know, my disposable income was going for like clothes and stuff like that. So I was never really in danger of having a drug problem because there's no way I would spend my money on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, no. You know, it's just not going to happen. I wanted to be a clothes horse. I wanted to do fun things. And that would have been so far down the list of anything I would have been willing to spend any money on. So,
yeah, I'm really glad that I just didn't want to do it. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, as far as pot is concerned, I just feel like, you know, all the reefer madness and all that stuff. I never grew up that way. I mean, it was always around and it was always available and it was just something that didn't scare me. So I had a completely different experience with it. But, you know, I mean, I my experience, again, being in Southern California and kind of, I didn't grow up only in a beach town, but I spent basically my high school years there. And so, and it was a beach town in the 80s, you know? I mean,
oh my gosh, sounds like a blast.
It really was. Does. And I was fortunate because I wasn't a kid that was going to get all caught up in that. I mean, I got caught up in having fun, but I didn't get caught up in trouble. You know, yeah. I could have been a better student and I could have paid more attention in class, but I just had fun with my friends and we would go to parties and do all the typical stuff. And it wasn't, you know, Bob was like, I can't even imagine your life growing up. I don't think I would have ever passed any class. I would have just been having too much fun. And, you know, I look back and I think I'm really grateful. And I'm just grateful that I didn't have the personality because at the time when I graduated high school, I met this guy. He was like my first real boyfriend. And I remember I wrote in my diary, he does too many drugs. Boy, that was an understatement. And he did cocaine. And I guess this woman had given him, this woman by the name of Poppy, gave him a bunch of crystal meth, a lot of it. And I didn't know what it was. I thought it was cocaine. And he was like, he was like, you know, he was 18. So you know how the 18-year-olds are like naturally lean young men. He was the naturally lean guy. And he was doing this crystal meth all day. And I did it because I was so upset that he was doing it. And I thought, well, if I do it, then I can't get mad at him. And I thought I was going to die. I'm not even kidding. I had done cocaine. It does not feel the same as crystal meth. Crystal meth is like taking poison. And I thought I was going to die. And so in the period of like 5 days after he was just doing it all the fucking time, he had lost about 15 pounds. And he was so skinny and he looked so sick. And I just said, okay, it's the drug or me. And he threw the rest in the toilet. And he did stop doing, you know, he stopped all of it. He stopped cocaine and all of it. And then eventually we broke up anyway. But it was like, you know, I'm glad that I didn't get into that, because he was an alcoholic and he had a propensity to all of that kind of addictive behavior. And I didn't. And I mean, other than smoking, stupid me smoked, but I stopped in 2013.
I did too when I was young. Yeah, we all do.
Well, I did
things.
It up all the way up until I was my 40s. But,
you know, when I was in college at WVU, and I'm older than you, you smoke in class if you wanted to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
I had an English professor. She'd be at in front of the class and she'd sit up on top of her desk and she'd, you know, light up and
I wouldn't be able to handle it now, because when I did quit, I was like, I never looked back. And thankfully, I quit in 2013. So yeah.
That's when I quit too. I got shingles. Wow. But it was something I was deeply ashamed of. And I only did it
in the privacy
of my own home, you know, where no one could find out the way God intended. I had stopped smoking in public many, 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 many years before. But for me, it was a stress reliever.
Yeah.
And I'd sit at home and I'd smoke. And then I thought, man, these things are expensive. And then
and now they're ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, and I wish I could have every dime back that I spent on cigarettes. Yeah. And then I quit and all of a sudden my sinuses were better and it took like 10 years off my face. So it's like, okay, that was perfect.
And you know what happened to me? I used to get sick all the time. At least 2 times or 3 times a year, I would get a cold. I have had 2 minor colds since 2013. That's it. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's really made a difference. And I never got COVID. I mean, granted, I didn't go out and I hid from COVID, but I didn't get it even after, you know. And I know that I was around it a couple of times when other people had it and I didn't know, but I didn't get it, thankfully. I don't know if I'm naturally immune to it, but I will say that I think that the fact that, I mean, if I had been a smoker, I couldn't even imagine smoking during COVID, but if I had been a smoker, I feel like perhaps my resistance would have been down and I might have gotten it, you know, where maybe. I think, you know, I don't know for sure. But anyway, well, I guess we better get going. We got to wrap this thing up. I got things to do, people to see, people to talk to. Busy, busy schedules here.
I'm so
grateful that you had some time to chat with us. I really enjoyed our conversation and I think people are going to enjoy it too. So as I ask all my guests tell everyone where to find you.
Well, I have a YouTube channel, Politics with Sherry Jacobus. That's also the name of my Patreon podcast. You can see me on Twitter at Sherry Jacobus, Blue Sky Threads, all of that. And I want to have you back on my podcast very soon too, because I like exposing you to my audience. And I know there's a lot of cross-pollination, but we'll get that
done.
All right.
Well, you got it. Just let me know. And thank you, Sherry. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.